The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Welcome back to another episode of Behind the Panel, a podcast docuseries dedicated to everything comics, brought to you by Sci-Fi Wire. I'm your host, Mike Avila, and it's time to meet sibling rock stars turned comic book creators, Gerard and Mikey Way. One thing that is a common thread among comics pros is that they were all fans first. That's why you've seen so many actors, filmmakers, TV showrunners, and musicians cross over into comics. They want a chance to make their own four-color magic. The Brothers Way, Gerard and Mikey, certainly fit that bill. They came of age in the early aughts with the blockbuster rock band My Chemical Romance. But before they were filling stadiums and arenas, the brothers from Essex County, New Jersey, were diehard comics fans. Eventually, Gerard would co-create the Umbrella Academy and later serve as curator for DC Comics' Young Animal imprint. In July 2019, Young Animal returns with a new Doom Patrol serial plus two new series. One of those is Collapser, co-written by Mikey with Sean Simon. With the Way Brothers, comics is a lifelong passion. When I sat down with the guys, I wanted to find out where their comics fandom began. And considering these guys were part of one of the biggest alternative bands of the 21st century, I was a bit surprised by how mainstream some of their formative titles were.
When I talk about our first comics, I forget about that fact that we got a bunch of Archies.
From the barbershop we would get.
Yeah.
The barber would be like, I don't want these anymore, you know? And it would be just like random, maybe like a random DC Comics Presents, yeah. Like Superman.
And then like, I needed to get my tonsils out. So when I was in the hospital, my grandmother had brought me a 3-pack of comics. And the only one I remember is one of them was a Captain America. So then we started going to the corner store and getting Marvel books and getting DC books. I got really into X-Men. So that was the first thing I ever really chose myself.
I was into Spider-Ham. I mean, he's huge now because of the Spider-Verse, but...
You were ahead of the curve.
He was way ahead on Spider-Ham.
Yeah, he was an E-list character at the time. But yeah, I loved that and G.I. Joe. And
People forget how popular G.I. Joe was in the 80s.
Yeah, the comic continuity is kind of heavy if you go back and you look at those early G.I. Joe comics. It didn't follow the cartoon. It was kind of its own thing and it was fun. But yeah. I mean, that's where I kind of learned how to read from.
I think the thing that really attached to my brain when I was a kid was Inferno. It was that big...
I knew you were going to say that.
...crossover.
It's like Inferno, man.
Across all the X-books and, like, Daredevil, even though he wasn't an X-Men book. But I loved Inferno. Demons in New York City and X-Men fighting demons and turning into demons and stuff. It was the coolest.
Mikey, how about you?
Something that really, to this day, sticks with me is James Robinson's Starman.
Yeah.
What I really dug about it was, it would be Silver Age or Golden Age. They kind of had a lighthearted feel to them, but he put it through a lens of reality. The characters in those stories seem pretty happy-go-lucky sometimes, and any kind of gravity is glossed over. So it's like, I feel like the Starman run, it added brutality and PTSD and addiction. And you see these characters, some of them are senior citizens, and he's asking them about, oh, that time that you saved XYZ from the bank robbery. And it's like, oh, and they're all like these grizzled veterans. And I always thought that was cool. James Robinson was always really great at celebrating that era.
You guys are, I think, at the right age to dig into this question. The Death of Superman storyline. Did you guys buy into all that hype?
I was working at a comic store at the time, so it was actually irritating because everybody was obsessed with polybags,
yep.
And you would get hundreds of people coming in really aggressively trying to get this Death of Superman issue. And I just remember thinking the whole time, well, he's not going to stay dead. What's the big deal? But that's just because it's comics, not because it was DC. Nobody stays dead in comics, so I didn't see the big deal.
This subject, there's a great debate about it. When you look at it now, some of it seems kind of silly, but I was in the sweet spot. I was 12. I loved it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I was so entrenched with the four Supermen, and I knew he was coming back too. It was kind of like, remember in the 80s, Hulk Hogan? He was always going to win. You knew this before the match started, and it's kind of like that with Superman. He's going to come back. And I was still sucked in, you know what I mean? I was still like, oh my God, what's going to happen? Is one of these four guys Superman? Oh my God, you know, like I still fell for it.
For Gerard, though, Grant Morrison's legendarily wacky Doom Patrol run was a game changer. It would prove to be incredibly influential years later on Gerard's own breakthrough series, The Umbrella Academy.
My favorite story from that era, oh man, there's so many amazing ones. I'm trying to remember the specific issue where they had a group therapy session, but that was my favorite. Yeah, there's just so many. The Candlemaker, it's hard to pick. And it had the perfect ending to the whole series as well. I just loved the whole thing, but it was a big inspiration to Umbrella Academy, which is funny because then my Doom Patrol was kind of referential to Grant's run, but it was less like Umbrella Academy and his Doom Patrol.
If somebody walks up to you and asks, why is that run so great? How do you describe that run to somebody?
The run is great because it's experimental. I mean, Grant was doing things like automatic writing and stream of consciousness, and he would make crazy layouts and stuff. And Richard Case was fulfilling this role of bringing all this stuff to life and just putting a lot of energy into it. It's experimental. It's fun. It has a lot of heart.
He bent the conventions of a team book. That's what I took away that I still remember to this day. He did things that people didn't do in team books.
Gerard's comic book career officially began in 2007 with the debut of the first volume of The Umbrella Academy. At this point, MCR had already become a double platinum success thanks to records like Three Cheers for Sweet Revenge and The Black Parade. But comics had actually been Gerard's first love. His first published work was a dark comic called On Raven's Wings, published back when he was just 16 years old and going by the professional name Gary Way. It was the Umbrella Academy that proved Gerard wasn't just slumming in comics, he had great inventive stories to tell. The series won the 2008 Eisner Award for Best Limited Series. Way and co-creator-illustrator Gabriel Ba have returned to the Academy several times since then, including the third and latest volume, Hotel Oblivion. With the Netflix TV adaptation a big hit that's just been renewed for season 2, fans will be happy to know Way and Ba have a fourth story arc already in the works. Fans of the comic and the TV show know how important time travel is to the story. Gerard wants you all to know just how stressful that element is to keep straight.
Time travel is a really big headache. To some extent, it's involved in Doom Patrol as well. With Casey's power about always getting somewhere early, there's kind of a time travel element to Casey's power when she's driving Danny. So that was difficult as well. I see what they're doing on the TV show that we're producing, and they really are racking their brains trying to figure out how it all connects and all works. And in the second volume, Dallas, time travel is a really big thing, and it was such a headache. I never wanted to do time travel again after that, and then I did it again in Doom Patrol.
So you're just a masochist at this point.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mikey Way took his first crack at comics in 2008 with an 8-page Batman story in a Halloween compilation DC Comics put out. It would take another decade for Mikey to get another project off the ground.
I had 2 pitches. One of them was an Aquaman pitch. And just as I had put it in, the people I was working with at the time at DC were like, this is great, but we can't use it. It was a reboot of Aquaman, taking Silver Age elements and modernizing them. And it was like this big thing with the Flying Dutchman and a prehistoric shark, the Megalodon. But yeah, they were like, this is great, we can't do it. Aquaman's spoken for. So then I had this other great story. It was a Teen Titans story. And then the deal was, earlier in life, I wasn't really good at multitasking, and My Chemical Romance had taken a lot of my energy.
During that time, Mikey continued with his music career, first with MCR, then with Electric Century. Then 2 years ago, he got together with old friend Sean Simon, who worked with Gerard on The True Lives of the Fabulous Killjoys, and the idea for Collapser took shape. Brief aside, the Fabulous Killjoys comic is actually a sequel to MCR's fourth album, Danger Days, The True Lives of the Fabulous Killjoys, released in 2010. The pitch for Collapser sounds like the perfect young animal book, trippy, ambitious, and layered. For Mikey, the story of a DJ who winds up with a black hole in his chest is the vehicle to tackle some classic comics themes, power and responsibility, as well as the issues he's personally struggled with in his own life, like anxiety and depression. He identifies with Liam, the main character, to the point that even the pea coat Liam wears is based on Mikey's preferred wardrobe choice.
It's a 20-something-year-old kid named Liam James. He's kind of stuck between real-world responsibility and his dreams and aspirations of becoming a world-renowned DJ. He kind of wakes up one day, and his mom leaves him something in her will. He finds out a lot about his mom through the course of a couple of issues, but yeah, he gets otherworldly powers. He opens up his city to become a warscape for an intergalactic arms race that centers around him.
And how did Collapser ultimately end up falling under the young animal imprint?
I think it started a while ago when Sean and Mikey were talking to Jim Lee about doing a series for DC, proper like DCU. And they started to develop something, and as they kept developing it, what started to become more and more interesting was the villain in the story, who was a guy who had a black hole inside of him. So everything kind of shifted, and then that became the main character, and that became Collapser.
We took things we liked about the villain, and we made him a hero.
When the idea was formulating in your head, were you thinking about telling a story that involves aspects of mental health and how that would translate to comics? Because that's a tricky thing to translate to comic books.
It is. I've dealt with mental health things my whole life, and I felt like I had to put it in the story. I felt like I wanted to put a piece of myself in. I know Sean battles with certain kinds of anxiety as well. It was important to kind of show that part in a comic book story.
Making music and writing comics calls for different creative energies. The brothers both admit comics challenges them in a way music does not.
I know that when we make music, it comes a lot more naturally and easier than sitting down and writing. Writing is one of the hardest jobs. I'm sure any writer will tell you this. It's a totally different headspace, although you're using your creativity, so that feels familiar. It feels good and it's fun, but there's a bit of a grind element to it where you just have to get past that blank page.
I find you could sit there for an hour with two panels, but once you hit a straight, there's no feeling like when you figure it out.
Yeah.
And you're like, boom, three pages, done. It's a similar feeling to when you write a song.
Yeah,
when you
yeah.
make a breakthrough in
when
a
you
song.
Make a breakthrough in a song, there's this amazing feeling that you get. And the same thing happens when you've just written a lot of comic pages and you feel great about them. They're very similar feelings, and there's kind of nothing better than that feeling. By the time we got on tour for Danger Days, I couldn't write on the road anymore. It was just too difficult. I mean, at that point, then I became a parent too, so there's that other layer. And even being away from home, it was just still very hard to write comics. So there was a massive gap between Umbrella Academy Dallas and Hotel Oblivion, and it was a gap for him too.
That makes sense. I mean, it must be impossibly difficult to be able to turn those switches on and off with creativity, whether it's in music or comics. When you're doing both, I would imagine there's some moments where you're just on overload about it.
Yeah. And to some extent, you have a certain well of creativity and you can use that up, you know, and you kind of have to take breaks in order for you to be able to regenerate it again and get new ideas and more ideas. But, you know, you could use up your creativity for the day and just not be able to do anything creative after that.
Is that why it's important that you took that break with Young Animal?
Yeah, the break for Young Animal was important for a couple reasons. One, to like refill the well and build up the creativity again. Another one was we wanted to make sure a series could come out. We needed to get kind of off the monthly model track at the time because we wanted a 6-issue series to come out that wasn't ever late. Here's 6 issues that you know you're going to get. So I never stopped writing Doom Patrol. I've still been writing Doom Patrol since the last book was out. So that way we have artists working early and we needed to stockpile some issues.
As the curator of all things Young Animal, Gerard describes the return of the boutique pop-up imprint as Phase 3. It features the book he's writing again, Doom Patrol, with Jeremy Lambert co-scripting. Nick Darrington is back doing the covers, with an all-star lineup of pencilers handling the interior pages, including Becky Cloonan and Doc Shaner. Along with his brother Mikey's book, there's also Far Sector, which looks to take the Green Lantern myth in an entirely new and spectacularly weird direction.
We got Doom Patrol coming back, which I'm really excited about. And we have Mikey and Sean's and Elias's book, Collapser. And we have Nora and Jamal's Far Sector. I really feel like with this Doom Patrol, this run, which is the third arc, I feel pretty loosened up now. I think it took me like 12 issues to really fully get it. And then by the 13th, I was like, I think I fully understand this now. Each issue is kind of like its own special problem or setting or scenario, and it's basically resolved by the time the issue's done. So it's a lot less like the first series, which was this really long, kind of epic 11-issue thing. This is more self-contained per issue.
Was that a conscious goal you set?
Yes. After doing 11 issues of just like a long, epic story, I really just wanted to do something that was self-contained. They could be like these little adventures, and I wanted to keep it fresh and exciting for myself to have something new every month.
Of course, what many fans have been waiting to see is Gerard and Mikey creatively reuniting and doing a book together. While they don't have any concrete plans for that, at least nothing they would share, we may have stumbled across an idea as we engaged in some classic comic book nerd wish fulfillment.
You mentioned DC Comics Presents earlier when we were talking about the early comics. If Jim Lee and Dan DiDio give you the, bring this over into Young Animal, relaunch DC Comics Presents, who are the two characters you guys put together for the Gerard and Mikey Way DC Comics Presents?
Oh man, if we could use anybody.
Dr. Fate.
Dr. Fate would be great.
I've always had an itch.
For Dr. Fate?
Yeah, to me he's a mysterious character. Everyone kind of has their own spin on him. I mean, I felt that way about Hawkeye, but someone's killing it on Hawkeye right now. But yeah, Dr. Fate, I think, would be my half of the DC Presents.
Yeah, I got to think of who I'd want to use. I like Green Lantern a lot. It might be Green Lantern, even though Grant's doing an amazing job with Green Lantern right now. I think doing Green Lantern would probably be really fun.
Green Lantern and Dr. Fate.
I think so.
Save that for the next DC Summit.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Thanks for listening to Behind the Panel. Make sure you never miss an episode of Comic Book Goodness by subscribing from your favorite podcast provider. Behind the Panel is a Sci-Fi Wire podcast, executive produced by Matt Romano, produced, scored, and edited by Paul Terry, mixed and mastered by Dave Draper, and I'm your host, Mike Avila. And don't forget to follow me on Twitter and Instagram, at Mike Avila, and let me know what you're reading. And please, don't forget, before you bag and board your comics, read them. Till next time.